Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today we are talking about, you know, something that, you know, is a very big and important issue in South Africa, and that is the issue of saving. I think South Africa has developed that reputation of being a country of spenders as opposed to savers, and we're going to be talking about how issues such as financial literacy can actually help to close, you know, some of those gaps, and you know how we can actually help ourselves to improve on all of those different fronts, and to help us to unpack, you know, some of the issues and how we, you know, how we go about all of this. We are joined by Fazana Boeta, who is a segment solutions manager at Sanlam Savings. Fazana, greetings to you.
Good morning, Madiwe. Thank you for having me.
No. Thank you so much for being with us. Just from a place of departure on our end, you know, as Sanlam Savings, because we've actually had a couple of people from, you know, Sanlam that have been on the podcast before. And it usually always seems as if there's a different division of some sort, you know, that's being referred to. So maybe you can give us some insight into Sanlam Savings. What is it that's happening there? And in your particular unit, you know, the type of work that you're involved in.
Okay, great. Yeah. So definitely there's multiple arms or multiple businesses within the Sanlam Group. And we've created customization and differentiation in order to serve our clients more efficiently. And in the savings business in particular, our mission is, it's going to sound a bit simplistic, but our mission is to encourage people to save. As you know, there's a very low savings culture in South Africa. So our business in the recurring savings space is to help people to build their wealth over time. So people who have monthly recurring premiums and are looking to build wealth over time, we have a very specific business unit for that, and we develop products and provide support to those clients. We also, within our recurring savings business, we take care of what is called closed book, and those are for our clients who have these lump sums and they no longer have recurring premiums. So it's old money that we need to help them to manage as well. So we try to make sure that our clients are taken care of in terms of their financial goals around savings. In my particular business unit, Segment Solutions, we are responsible for marketing and communications, which, as you know, being a journalist yourself, the message is quite important. How we communicate to our clients and our customers is quite important, and that's one of my business functions.
So from that point of view, then, when it comes to financial literacy, right, how does that in particular help actually change people from being a country of spenders, like we said earlier on, to being a country of, you know, to being a country of savers? You know, where does financial literacy actually fall in there?
I think once you know, you're able to do, right? So the idea is to allow people to become aware and educated around the areas that they are not yet aware of. So we find that if we have a culture of spenders, we believe that part of the reason for that is because they're not aware of the consequence of their spending actions, about the need to save, and also to make such an abstract concept more concrete, to understand why do you need to save? What are the instances that you will need money for, and how can we get you to that journey? So financial literacy is part of that upskilling and educating process that allows for customers and clients to make those abstract abstract concepts more concrete, you know, make it a little bit more tangible for the average man, get them able and confident. Our brand campaign currently is Live With Confidence. And the idea around that as well is that when you know what you are doing, it allows you to be confident. So around financial literacy, if we can upskill them in an area that they are not 100% sure of, then it will lead them to a sense of confidence and making better financial decisions and choices.
When it comes to that issue of, you know, that specific issue of saving versus spending, at the moment, maybe you could shed some light into some of the factors that have actually led us to be where we are, because you said it just now that maybe the fact that people are spenders is because there hasn't been enough done to actually expose them to what the benefits of perhaps savings would be. So at the moment, what do you think has actually driven that spending culture in South Africa?
Well, personally, I think that spending is instant gratification, saving is delayed gratification. And I think it's something that we as a culture and as a people need to get to terms with. And we're not able to see how the benefit of delaying gratification can exceed the instant reward of being able to buy something like a car or something fancy, a new outfit or whatever the case is. So I think that's one of the things. South Africa is very culturally driven, and we have multiple cultures that sort of influence the way we see and perceive money and finances. So that's also something that we need to be cognizant of. I think that we also live in an age where we're very heavily influenced by media. And because we are becoming a little bit more westernized, we're very influenced by media advertising and the perception that we need to have certain assets or certain looks in order to feel like we've arrived. So with all of those things influencing the way we behave, I think people, as soon as they get income or they get their first job, they feel like now that I've gotten this job or I've gotten to this point, what I should be doing is that I should be driving this particular car. I should be having the latest iPhone. I should look a certain way. And that is influencing our behaviors in terms of money spending as well. So those are some of the things that I think is influencing a culture of spending instead of saving. And then we need to make it more practical to show how delaying gratification has a far greater reward. But because it's something that needs to be perceived by the individual, it will take a bit of time and a bit of work to shift that mindset.
Maybe to paint that picture of how bleak the situation is, how bleak the situation is on the ground, savers versus spenders, and all of the different factors that you've just mentioned. The fact that you have media telling people that you need to buy or drive A, B, or C, just as a way to show that you've achieved a certain level of success. The fact that consumerism and a lot of the messaging that's given to us. People feel like, fear of missing out, FOMO, for having all of these things. So on the ground, are there perhaps any statistics that you could perhaps help us that you have that could help us to paint that picture of how bad the problem is on the ground? I think the only one I have on my hand is hearing that roughly half of all South Africans even have the ability to save at all.
Yeah, so, well, the Human Research or the Human Sciences Research Council published a report that showed that 48% of South Africans don't manage to save at all, with 42% reporting no long-term saving of any kind. Okay, so imagine something happens like COVID last year and more than half the population or almost half the population in South Africa were not prepared for that drop in income, that inability to work, those additional expenses because they had no saving. Further to that, and what I found was a very interesting statistic on trading economics was that the South African debt to income ratio in 2020 was 77%, which was up from 2019, which was at 72%. And what that basically means is that the South African household has more debt than the income that they bring into their household. So they're actually living beyond their means. And that is two-thirds or more than two-thirds of the population, which is quite scary.
Yeah, it is quite scary, from that point of view. And when you think about it, especially that part of, how many households, because it feels like on one hand, you've got just under half of South Africans just unable to save at all. But at the same time, you have two-thirds of households, like you said, spending more than what is actually coming in on a monthly basis. From a financial literacy point of view, I think now, in terms of actually turning the tide, right? What are some of the tools that are there? Because do you think it's more an issue of exposure and education, or do you think it's more a shift in mindset? Because there's still all the messaging that you spoke about earlier on, because a person can know that they need to spend less than what comes in, but getting them to actually do that is a different matter altogether.
That's true. So I think it's both. We need a shift in mindset so that all the information and the resources are something that a person willfully will use to help them on that journey. So I think as one of the first tools, now that we consider the stats, one of the first things that is a clear indication that is required is people need to learn how to budget better. So when the debt to income ratio increased significantly over the last 2 years, we see that even though people are not able to bring in the same income, they still are overextending themselves in terms of debt. And another thing we find is that people don't have a very clear picture of their sort of balance sheet, if I can call it that. They don't understand the money coming in and the outflows of money going out into various areas. And once they get a grip of that and they start to manage their own finances the way a business would manage their balance sheet, it will help them to be a little bit more self-directed in their behaviors, understanding consequence and reward. And the same on that point, consequence and reward, helping to indicate to a customer or a client what is the reward and what are the consequences of not saving, making them aware of that will help with the mind shift thing. Because like we said a little earlier, that instant gratification is a form of reward that they're giving themselves immediately for anything that they do, earning an extra income, getting a bonus, or even earning the first income. The thing they want to do is reward themselves with something tangible. So if we can help them to understand that there is reward even bigger than the instant gratification, creating that consequence and reward model for them to drive behavior, I think that that will help them to get on board with their finances and get to those goals.
And in terms of exposing people to, high levels of financial literacy, getting to terms with, I like the fact that you mentioned the balance sheet, right? Because in essence, all of us are little businesses. If we actually think about it, there's money that comes in, whatever it is that you're doing, whether you have your own business, whether you are employed, there is money coming in, there is money coming out. So, I like that analogy. But what do you think all of that does, from a mental health or mental well-being, point of view?
Okay, so if we, I mean, everyone's familiar with the hierarchy of needs, right? And we have those basic human needs, and then we have the need for financial security and to be able to meet those needs. And I think that once we get to grips with our finances and we fully understand what we have, what we can have going forward, that builds confidence and it meets that need and it allows us to move into the next hierarchy of needs. Because when we operate on a point of lack, we keep operating on that level of needs where we keep trying to meet that need over and over again, but we are creating a self-fulfilling prophecy by not understanding and becoming aware of what is our financial situation and what are we doing to cause that situation. So when we are aware, we are able to build confidence and knowledge and we can make better decisions. And then we essentially meet that need and we move into a hierarchy in terms of hierarchy of needs. In terms of psychological wellness, that builds confidence. If you feel like you are able and capable, it builds confidence in anything, in a sport, in your relationships. When you feel like you are being effective, when you feel like you know what you're doing, it builds confidence. And when you are confident, you tend to operate on a whole different level than you were as a rookie, so to speak. So I think, gaining confidence and becoming aware, fixing some of the bad choices that we are making, because essentially these are things that we have some control over to some degree. Being aware and trying to take control will build confidence and help us in terms of our mental wellness as well.
Fazana, I just wanna maybe a quick follow-up and, a thought, all at the same time, because, as you're talking, one can't help but to think about, the way that, as people, especially in a modern society, we are sort of taught to appreciate and understand money. Because as much as we might say there's a lack of financial literacy, in the economy, notwithstanding that, we just don't seem to have a good relationship with the money in general, because in relationships, in relationships, that are leading households, it's said that money is one of the biggest, one of the biggest causes of divorce, around the world. At the same time, in a workplace, People are usually not allowed to even discuss how much they're earning. And, you know, that sort of filters into households as well, where parents aren't really transparent with either their spouses or even the rest of their families, kids, etc. They don't really talk about, you know, what the actual financial situation is in a household. I remember last year, we actually spoke to some financial planners from Sanlam, and they actually mentioned the fact that the COVID-19 pandemic had exposed this hole where suddenly, because everyone is in a crisis situation, a number of parents, elderly parents, now had to start making disclosures to their kids to say, this is my actual financial situation, etc. So my question is just more, you know, how do we, I guess, tackle all of these different things, right? Because a culture is like a series of things that all come together to form, you know, whatever our worldview is on money. And outside of financial literacy, it feels like financial literacy is one of those things that comes if people are having open discussions about how much they earn, discussions about what household income looks like, etc. You know, one just doesn't happen upon financial literacy. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the whole thing about money being a big driver in relationships and even at work, it's very topical right now. Just recently, I had a discussion as well about the impact of finances on relationships and how it can build happiness. And I think, like you said, it starts with dialogue and disclosure. But I don't necessarily feel like we need to be in the detail. Like, we don't necessarily need, especially if it's a difficult talking point, we don't need to say, okay, I earn 20,220 Rand, for example. But what we do need to discuss is, what are our needs as a household or as a family or as a business? What do we need financially? What are our goals, short-term, medium-term, long-term? What are our expenses and debts? So again, even as a family, if you work together in terms of a balance sheet and you understand who's bringing in what, who is responsible for what, then you have a clear picture of the expectations and the input of everyone involved. And you also have a whole family or team aligned to a specific goal in terms of finances. And I think that helps. So you shift the conversation from being monetary to something more specific and tangible in terms of the family or the business or whatever it is, whatever the relationship dynamic is, to very specific goals and outcomes. And what do you, each of you, need to do? What do you each bring in financially? What in terms of the income as well as the debt? And what are the goals that you are aligning towards? And how do each of you contribute to those goals? So I think if we have a discussion along those lines, it's very much more tangible. It's a lot less sensitive because people don't want to disclose their finances to the fine detail. But it allows for a workable relationship if you tackle it that way, I think.
No, that certainly does make sense. And especially, I guess, just opening up some of these dialogues, especially in the house, that would likely go quite a long way in at least making sure that, one, people talk about these issues, but secondly, that they're actually interested enough to actually go out and then learn and acquire more knowledge. And on that front, though, what practical steps can a person actually take to actually close some, to actually get themselves a bit more financially literate?
Okay. Well, there are multiple things, and I do believe that there are two sets of responsibility on the financial literacy part. So there's the individual responsibility, and then there's the collective responsibility, and that's where the companies and financial institutions play a part. So from an individual point of view, the things that I can recommend is, for one, understand what you know and what it is you need to know to get you to your very specific goal. So it will start with your budgeting exercises and your discussions with your household and understanding what your situation is and what you would like your situation to be. Then you are able to see, okay, what is lacking here and what do I need in order to get me to that point? Okay, so you need to do your own awareness exercise as an individual. And then there are tons or numerous amounts of resources available in terms of physical literacy that you can read either online or in books and in newspapers. We also have programs. So companies offer financial literacy programs. Sanlam ourselves, I can tell you from a company point of view, we have a multifaceted approach to educating our clients. We believe that we should start early. So just recently, we launched a thing called the Sanlam Savings Jar. And the idea there was to target children to allow parents to upskill their children in terms of saving and understanding how to delay gratification, how to create very specific goals. So the children will download this application and they'll play with the tool, and they will allow them to set very specific financial outcomes, and then they can save for these specific outcomes. So we're educating children on that level. And then we also have drives as a company at different universities and schools, and also through Takalani Sesame, so that we can educate at that level. And then we also have consumer education programs that we run at different work sites, and we try to have media stuff like this as well to educate the population. So there's a multifaceted approach from a company point of view for the collective responsibility to help people. In terms of Sanlam as a company itself, we also have tools and resources from a product point of view that can help clients. So we have our financial advisors, who are the professionals around financial planning, and they can equip a client to help them to make better financial decisions. We have a tool called the Goal Manager, which helps the client sitting with the family or sitting with the financial advisor, helps the client to set very specific goals for their family. Like, I need to have 100,000 rand for Lobola payment to marry someone, or I'd like to put a down payment on a house or send my child to university. All of those goals can be made tangible, and then we will allow the client to understand what does that mean for them in terms of savings. You need to put 500 rand away for a 20-year period growing at a certain rate, and we will manage that according to that client's goal to make sure that they have the money for that purpose. So there are multiple tools and resources, but it starts with the client understanding what they know, what they don't know, and where they'd like to go.
I really like the initiative around getting the kids to download the app. You know, we have to start them young on some of these paths, especially when it comes to delaying that gratification. If it's at least ingrained from a young age, hopefully into adulthood, you know, all of that fear of missing out, all of the FOMO will be minimized in some ways. As we end off, Fazana, I just want to get a sense then, when it comes to financial literacy, you've given us, you know, quite a big breakdown just around some of the things that people can actually do to go and upskill themselves, and all of the different ways that, you know, Sanlam is working to tackle the problem. But from your, you know, research, when it comes to, I guess, an adult, because at least with the kids, it's about getting them to delay the gratification, etc. But for adults, where do you think are some of the big knowledge gaps? Like, what are the big things that people can start reading on now? Because I think earlier on you alluded to issues of budgeting, for example. You know, so if I guess following on from that, what are some of the, you know, big places where you're saying, okay, fine, you know, if we could improve people's understanding of that and that, I think we would be well on our way.
You know, I think one of the things, and I discovered this from my own interactions with my own peers and colleagues over the years, is that people don't understand interest rates, for example. So that's a big financial literacy gap that we need to help adults to get to. Interest rates in favorable circumstances where you're earning an interest rate, you need to understand those concepts, that if you put money away and it grows at a certain rate over time, what are the benefits to that? But also the other type of interest when you are paying. So when there's bad debt, or when you are servicing your credit card and your home loans, have a good understanding of what is the consequence of the interest that is being accrued to the debt that you have. That's something that I think most people don't understand. They just sign the dotted line and they put themselves in a contractual relationship with financial institutions without understanding what it is that is required of them and at what price they're paying. So that's a very important thing. And that's probably why a lot of people are over indebted, because they sign for things. It always looks pretty in the beginning, but there are certain terms and conditions around interest and time periods that clients are not very aware of, and then they find themselves in this position. Also understanding things like rates of return, so understanding markets a little bit. I know that most people tend to believe that investments are a complex world, and yes, if you are actually structuring investments, it's a complex world, but having a working understanding of investments, of interest rates that are accrued in investments, that's a very important thing. And I think every individual should try to get to some understanding of how investments work, what investments are out there, so that they don't find themselves sitting in investment structures that are not suited for them. You find people signing contracts for a 20-year endowment when they actually needed access to the money in the first 2 to 3 years, for example. So individuals need to take responsibility for understanding those things as well. And if I had to just give like a basic tool that you can do, is to read and question everything. Read your contracts, read information that's available online to understand all these different things. So I think for adults, those are some of the important things. Understanding investments, even just at a high level, understanding debt and your interest rates that you earn, as well as the interest that you pay for some of the debt that you acquire.
That's Fazana Botha, who is a segment solutions manager at Sanlam Savings, giving us some insight into the state of consumer savings at the moment, some of the efforts that are being made to turn South Africa into a country of savers as opposed to spenders, some of the statistics saying that, painting a bleak picture showing that 48% of South Africans actually don't even manage to save anything at all, and that about two-thirds of households in South Africa are spending more than what they're actually bringing in, which is sort of contributing to this virtuous cycle of indebtedness in South Africa. And, towards the end, just talking about some of the practical ways in which people can actually help to upskill themselves. And she's saying that, two of the biggest knowledge areas or knowledge gaps that people can actually help themselves with is around understanding interest rates, what's actually going on there, what accrues, what doesn't accrue, over what period, in what way, before you agree to something. And then lastly, she's saying, question everything, read everything, understand before you put your signature on that dotted line. Fazana, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Diwe. It was a very good conversation.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Savings. This is and should be a big mission. I know that it should be the month of July, which is known as Savings Month in South Africa, which means that people do know and understand the fact that, more work needs to be done around savings. But I think this really flows nicely from the previous conversation that we had around savings, last week, and the type of impact that it has on overall investment in the country. So all of these things, because we keep saying it time and time again that the things in an economy do not operate in silos. Everything is systematic. Everything is part of a system, and everything has a knock-on effect of some sort. So if you find yourself in a situation where, roughly 32% of, South Africans, or, more realistically, 42% of South Africans are unemployed at the moment, then it makes sense that around 48%, according to the numbers that, Fazana was giving to us earlier, would not have the ability to save at all, right? So you have, the employment situation feeding into the saving situation. At the same time, the rate at which people's responsibility financially is as big as it is, and especially with some of the status symbols that we spoke about earlier, people getting into unnecessary debt, all of that feeds into that case as well. And then we also have to take into consideration the fact that people don't really see the need to save. The fact that if, as long as you have money and you feel like it's burning a hole in your pocket, you have to spend it. You have to put it, you have to put it to work. I think, all of those things are working against South Africa. If we were to find a situation where we could increase the rate of savings, that might do a lot, for the financial financial well-being of, you know, of the country as a whole, because on the household level, you have households that are less vulnerable to some of the shocks that we've seen recently. For example, if more households had savings, they might not have had to go and take out more loans to just cope with what happened with the pandemic, you know, which feeds into that cycle. So everything is one thing feeding into the another. But I think for the conversation around financial literacy, it is necessary for people to just go out. Consider yourself a business. I think that is where we all need to begin. Consider yourself a business. Learn what you need to know about business. And in this particular case, what money is coming in, what money is going out, how do you manage the flow, right? And just make sure that you are living well within your means. Financial literacy important, and it should be something that, you know, we spoke earlier about the culture, right? And I honestly believe that we really need to be doing more to educate kids, to educate children, young people from a very early age about finances, just so that by the time they get into adulthood, they aren't bamboozled or it isn't deer in the headlights sort of situation, because that's what seems to tend to happen. People aren't having conversations about money, and then suddenly you are employed and saddled with a lot of money and you don't know how to handle it or what to do with it. And if we were to have, you know, a better culture just around talking about money at the earlier ages, that might help us have you know better financially literate adults that do prioritize savings and actually feed into, you know, national savings, which feeds into national investments, which then feeds into a better investment case for the country overall. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.